Chapter 28, Publishing Society, Deed of Trust. When Mother foils a demon scheme, do not mar her success. The hardest battle is the last one. Mary Baker Eddy, 1898. An inspiring letter from Mrs. Eddy, Miscellany, page 121, was read by the first reader to the congregation of the Mother Church on Communion Sunday, January 2nd. One short paragraph stated, quote, "That glory only is imperishable, which is fixed in one's own moral makeup," end quote. In another paragraph, the mother mentioned, quote, "Today in Concord, New Hampshire, we have a modest hall. Ere long, I will see you in this hall. Deo Volente," end quote. Soon thereafter, first members were invited to Christian Science Hall, and before the year was over, the mother would teach her last class of students in this modest hall. This last class may have been in her thought at the opening of the new year, as were a number of other steps for the completion of her mission. The 19th century phenomena, Christian Science, was the marvel of the centuries, the culmination of nearly 2,000 years of Christianity. But the present work of the students would not enlarge and extend this glorious science in future ages. It was up to the founder to solidify what she had accomplished if Christian Science was to continue among the people. Jesus' words, quote, "He that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do," end quote, were just as true of Mrs. Eddy and her followers. But the example of the works of those who followed Jesus was before the leader's thought. No doubt the greater works would appear in the fullness of time, but they were not in evidence in 1898. Was her work, Christian Science, to suffer the same fate as Jesus's? That is, to be buried in 1,000 years of dark ages? If the zeal of Christian Scientists could be directed aright, if the love and sincerity of her earnest followers could be guided safely past the siren aisle of human aims, ambitions, pleasures, friendships, quote, "The great and only danger in the path that winds upward," end quote, then science would not again disappear from among mortals. But how to preserve her teaching till the fullness of time? How to safeguard all she had accomplished for mankind until her followers were ready to follow their leader in place of pursuing the ways of the world? For more than 30 years, ever since 1866, the discoverer had been founding her great discovery. Until now, it was popular and prosperous. Could human prosperity and popularity continue a cause? Were they not frail and fleeting? The constant daily direction and correction demanded of the leader must somehow continue to guide the students without her personal presence if Christian Science was here to stay. The woman's disciples were blinded by the same suggestion of mortal mind that had misled the Master's disciples nearly 2,000 years earlier. In other words, quote, "Who shall be greatest?" end quote. Had not this silent foe nullified the potential of her talented adopted son? The mother had saved her cause from this evil that was using him and saved him from becoming his own worst enemy. But Foster Eddy was not the evil. He was only the victim of malicious mind because of his ability and high position. If those in high places were blinded by this evil while the mother was at their side with daily guidance, who could protect her cause and her other sincere students in years to come? As always, her thought turned to God for the right step, for guiding the children of Israel. And as always, infinite wisdom gave her a solution. Consulting with no one and with no legal assistance, Mrs. Eddy wrote a legal document and sent the following notice to the board of directors. Gift to the Mother Church and a grant of trusteeship to the First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston, Mass. January 15, 1898. My beloved students, I appreciate your uniform loyalty and courtesy to Mother, who desires to know no partiality for one or another of her children, but to earnestly consider the welfare of all. I have asked for a small board of trustees to keep peace in the family, and as I believe a strong board, one is a businessman, another is a doctor, and still another a scholar. I now recommend that these trustees continue at present, Mr. Armstrong as the business manager of the publishing house, for the benefit of the Mother Church in Boston, Massachusetts. Please to hand an attested copy of this letter and documents to the editors of the Christian Science Journal for publication in the March number of the Christian Science Journal. With love, Mother Mary Baker Eddy. The founding fathers of our nation had turned to divine providence for guidance when they had failed to progress in drafting a constitution, and from that came our constitution with a balance of powers. This principle of checks and balances was well understood by the mother and embodied in her manual in the, quote, Committee on Finance, end quote, section as a safeguard, which is obvious in these words from the first edition. Quote, this bylaw is designed not as much for this hour as for future years, end quote. And now God had given her another check on power. That is the question, who shall be greatest? Her new board of trustees, to keep peace in the family and to balance the power, was to continue at present Mr. Armstrong as the business manager. Mr. Armstrong was at that time a member of the board of directors. The trustees were to employ a director and to review his employment annually. 2 days later, the mother verified the authorship of her new deed of trust in a letter to Judge Hanna. I read and showed my woman document to Lawyer of Concord, who is considered smart, and he said there is nothing incorrect in it. Well, had I been its author, I scarcely could have believed it, but I was not more the author of that than of Science and Health, as I regard it. In the fall of 1893, Mrs. Eddy had had to gather the reins of the Publishing Society into her hands before re-donating the Christian Science Journal to the National Christian Scientist Association. That body had since been superseded by the Mother Church, so the present status of her gift was questionable. To implement the gift to the Mother Church, once again, the Mother drew things into her hands through a bill of sale dated January 21, 1898, wherein the Publishing Society conveyed to her all their goods and chattels. 4 days later, the final version of the deed of trust organizing the Christian Science Publishing Society, given by Mary Baker Eddy, January 25, 1898, Boston, USA, was signed by all parties concerned. The first to sign was the donor, Mary Baker Eddy, followed by her small, strong board of three trustees. The businessman was Edward P. Bates. The doctor, metaphysician, was James A. Neal. And the scholar was William P. McKenzie. The beneficiary of the trust is the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts, which is to receive the entire net profits of said business every 6 months. In a separate document, the church was also given all the real estate Mrs. Eddy had acquired for housing the Publishing Society, but the business itself and its assets were not given to the church. All the goods and chattels, including the Christian Science Journal, the linotype, all pamphlets, tracts, and other literature, subscription lists of the journal, and of the Christian Science Quarterly, and much more, quote, I, Mary Baker G. Eddy, do hereby sell and convey to the said Bateses, Neal, and McKenzie, and their successors, in the trust hereinafter established, end quote. Not only was the business given to these three men, but they were required to manage it, quote, upon their own responsibility, end quote. Two more interesting aspects of the Publishing Society Deed of Trust are, first, that it is a perpetual and irrevocable trust, and second, that the three trustees are not required to be members of the Mother Church. The requirement in this regard is 9. Said trustees and their successors in trust shall not be eligible to said trusteeship or to continue in same unless they are loyal, faithful, and consistent believers and advocates of the principles of Christian Science as taught by me in my book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. No one but the leader comprehended the import of this trust and its provisions, for only she could foresee the part it would play when she was no longer present to keep peace in the family. One of the first things she did following the execution of the trust deed was to write three rules for the guidance and support of the trustees. These rules, in her own handwriting, she did not consign to the mails, but sent by special messenger. Calvin Fry's note to Mr. McKenzie, dated February 4th, reads, quote, I send you herewith a sheet which Mother wrote a few days ago for the trustees, but waited to send by messenger. End quote. For the Board of Trustees. 1. When Mother foils a demon scheme, do not mar her success. The hardest battle is the last one. 2. Never act on first thoughts, unless they be of good, God. But watch and separate the tares from the wheat. Learn by experience and careful comparison to know whence cometh your conclusions. Try the spirits before acting. Look over the purposes that the enemy might be trying to accomplish, and so avoid the snare. 3. Have the bird in your hand before disturbing the bush that he hangs upon. The trustees entered upon their responsibilities with enthusiasm, but the first rule was an enigma to them. Only the mother could comprehend the demon scheme that she had foiled. She alone could foresee the last battle, but when that hardest battle would come, her words would strengthen the trustees in their stand, lest her success be marred. And her instructions remain today for every sincere student to unravel for himself. If the 1898 Publishing Society Deed of Trust was designed to foil a demon scheme, we understand neither the leader nor Christian Science until we see clearly what it is. We cannot be mistaken about her intent and remain in the straight and narrow way to perfection. For, quote, the only incentive of a mistaken sense is malicious animal magnetism, the name of all evil, and this must be understood. End quote. Miscellany, page 357, line 8. Extending steps. The trust for the Publishing Society was perpetual and irrevocable, but not so another step, inaugurated in January of 1898. Newspapers, magazines, and public lectures were the media for disseminating information at the end of the century. For though telegrams and telephones were coming into common use, especially for business purposes, radio and television were still in the future. The public lecture was not only a major mode of communication, but was also a very popular pastime in all the cities and towns of America. People would readily attend a public lecture who would never venture into a Christian Science church. The founder, who was always reaching out to the people, wrote a new bylaw, which was published in the February Journal. Church Rule. This church shall establish a board of lectureship. This board shall consist of not less than 3 members. The candidates for membership shall be subject to the approval of Reverend Mary Baker Eddy. The lecturer's traveling expenses and the cost of hall shall be paid by the church that employs them, unless the receipts from the lecture are sufficiently remunerative. The lecture fee shall be left to the discretion of the lecturer. The present candidates for the Board of Lectureship are as follows. Mr. Edward A. Kimball, CSB. Reverend George Tompkins, DD, CS. Reverend William P. McKenzie, CS. Reverend Irving C. Tomlinson, C.S. Mr. Carroll Norton, C.S. On the 14th of February, the first public lecture on Christian Science, under the new bylaw, was delivered by Reverend Irving C. Tomlinson in Lynn, Massachusetts. The leader wrote him at that time, "I was glad to know you were called to the Bethlehem of Massachusetts, and am waiting to hear from you again on this subject so near my heart." The first called to lecture on the basis of the lectureship and to one of the most important fields in the vineyard of our God. Well, it is ominous, full of promise. Once that city resounded with my cures, but if there is a hope eternal, I feel it. God bless you. Prosper the seed you sow. Opposition to the lectures was more from within than without. Students who did not comprehend the difference between the world in the church and the church in the world were hesitant to accept this innovation, but that had been true of every progressive step Mrs. Eddy had taken in the founding of Christian Science. Many more promotive or solidifying steps were unfolding in the leader's thought, one of which she had alluded to in her letter to the New York churches on December 10th. This letter appeared on the first page of the January journal, for all the field needed the instruction sent to the churches in New York City. This instruction can still be read in Proseworks, Miscellany, page 243. However, the Miscellany reprint does not include the final paragraph alluding to the unfolding new step. Namely, the branch churches can hold a second service on Sunday, but the same Sunday lesson must be read at both services until April 1898. The field may have wondered what was to happen in April, but early in the year the Bible Lesson Committee knew, for Mrs. Eddy sent them a list of 26 topics as the subjects for their lessons. Until this time, the choice of lesson texts followed the international series. The new lesson topics did not appear in April as planned, but an April 28th article in the Independent Statesman told of another step that Mrs. Eddy had taken. Mrs. Eddy's gift. Reverend Mary Baker Eddy has given $100,000 for the construction of a church edifice to be used as the home of the first Church of Christ Scientist in the city of Concord. In response to an inquiry from the Concord Monitor, the following reply was received this afternoon. Quote, "On January 31st, 1898, I gave a deed of trust to three individuals, which conveyed to them the sum of $100,000 to be, at some future date, appropriated in building a granite church edifice for a first Church of Christ Scientist in this city. Very truly, Mary Baker Eddy." End quote. Was she distributing her money for the extension of Christian Science in order to exempt it from a contestation of her will? She knew a church in Concord was inevitable, although she never wanted one, and a granite church edifice in her native state, quote, "at some future date," end quote, would bear better testimony to her great life work than would litigation over her worldly wealth. Protection of her students, as well as of her funds, was in her thought. If she were no longer present, she knew that Calvin Fry would be called to account, for he had handled her cash book for a number of years, and her wealth had multiplied exceedingly in that time. She had Calvin take his records for the past 5 years, from January 1893 to January 1898, to be audited by Fred N. Ladd at the bank. This audit was completed and certificated on the 22nd of March. Another solidifying step was begun in January when the leader began plans for a Board of Education under the auspices of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Mrs. Eddy, as president of the college, was always the president of this board, and the first teacher selected by Mrs. Eddy was Mrs. Flavia Stigney Knapp. Late in February, after the wheels had been set in motion on the numerous new projects, Mrs. Eddy telegraphed an invitation to the first members to attend the Sunday morning services in Christian Science Hall on February 27th. Saturday noon, the clerk told Edward Bates of the invitation received the previous day, and also that the Railroad Commission ruling made it impossible to obtain an extra Sunday train. Since the scheduled train arrived too late for the service, Mr. Johnson had wired Mrs. Eddy that they could not come. Once again, Mr. Bates rose to the occasion with the statement, quote, "If Mrs. Eddy has invited us, there is a way to go," end quote. Perhaps Mr. Bates had learned from Jesus' parable that importunity gains more than friendship. He was not a man to take no for an answer, and after a good deal of importuning, managed to arrange for a special train so that all arrived in Concord in due time. Reverend Tomlinson, who was present on this occasion, was delightedly surprised when Mrs. Eddy read to the congregation from the scriptures without glasses, for he was one who had been very disturbed at seeing the eyeglasses hanging from a gold pin on her gown at the 4th of July celebration. This February morning, Mrs. Eddy spoke extemporaneously for 45 minutes to the congregation, which included a number of prominent Concordians, non-scientists, such as the mayor, postmaster, lawyers, and editors of the Concord papers. There is no record of this address, for although a stenographer was employed for that purpose, his effort was a failure. However, the occasion was reported in the local papers the following from the Concord People and Patriot. Sunday was a memorable day in the history of the Christian Science Church of this city. It was the first time at a regular service that the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, has appeared in person in the pulpit of Christian Science Hall. The audience room was found inadequate to accommodate the people who gathered early to attend. Many were unable to obtain seats, and others failed to gain even admission. Mrs. Eddy invited as guests to attend the service the 47 first members of the Mother Church in Boston, nearly all of whom were present, coming and returning on a special train, and there was also a delegation of 15 from Montreal. The visitors included various eminent persons, and in the congregation, which was a very intelligent and cultured one, were many people of Concord. The preliminary exercises were conducted by the Reverend Ezra M. Buswell, first reader, after which Mrs. Eddy herself appeared. She was modestly but very elegantly dressed. As she entered the hall, everybody present rose in deference and respect, and she took her place upon the platform amid profound silence. Mrs. Eddy appeared at her best, as sprightly and energetic as a young woman. She was escorted by Edward P. Bates. Mrs. H. K. Harrison of Boston, the charming soloist, sang "Saw Ye My Savior," a church communion hymn. Mrs. Harrison is the lady who lost her voice about 8 years ago and was recently restored to health by Christian Science, as expounded by Mrs. Eddy, and this is the first time that she has sung in public since her recovery. She had volunteered to sing whenever Mrs. Eddy might signify her wish to have her do so, and this occasion was selected for the purpose. And most effectively did Mrs. Harrison fulfill the mission. Many eyes were wet with tears as her rich voice sounded the notes of the beautiful selection. When the time came for Mrs. Eddy to speak, she stepped forward gracefully to the desk designed for her and read the 91st Psalm without using glasses. Her rich, clear, melodious voice served to the very best advantage to emphasize that beautiful passage of Scripture, which she characterized as containing more of meaning than is condensed into so many words anywhere else in all literature, except in the Sermon on the Mount by the great Galilean and Hillside teacher. She made this psalm her text and theme, and taking it passage by passage, she explained its meaning with an eloquence, force, and impressiveness that held her congregation in profound attention for 3/4 of an hour. She spoke extemporaneously, bringing out especially the theory of Christian Science as applied to practical life. And she explained the doctrines of her faith with such simplicity and yet with such choice language and richness of illustration that the address was pronounced one of the most instructive and ennobling ever delivered in this city. Alluding to that significant epoch in her own career, when she put forth her hand for God to lead her and felt a wondrous strength of power, her auditors, many of them, were moved with emotion. But she opened the way from this depth of feeling up to a plane of trust and faith and joy, an inspiration which seemed to move everybody within the reach of her pleasing voice. Her followers here felt afresh the wondrous influence of her remarkable spirituality, and the very atmosphere of her presence seemed to thrill them with enthusiasm and to awaken in them zeal. A few weeks later, in order to discern more closely the present status and needs of her students, and perhaps partially because of an unfortunate event which had transpired, the leader invited the first members to Christian Science Hall again, this time for a private meeting on a weekday afternoon. The students were so overjoyed with the invitation that they failed to watch and guard their thoughts, and they arrived an hour late. The delay had wakened them to their heedlessness, so the leader welcomed them even in their tardiness. But she said that if they did not make a better demonstration, the next time they need not come. According to Mr. Bates, Mrs. Eddy talked a while and then paused and resumed. Quote, "I want to hear you talk. When you come to see me, I do all the talking. When I meet you in public, I do all the talking. Now I want to hear my students talk." End quote. I suppose they all felt as I did, that to talk to Mrs. Eddy in a public place was a very serious thing. Consequently, we were silent. After a few moments of silence, she called on two or three of the students and asked them some questions, which they answered briefly. Finally, she said, quote, "This meeting is not taking the right course. I invited you up here to listen to what you have to say to me, and I hear nothing from you. I will tell you a story." End quote. At that point, Mrs. Eddy told a humorous story about a little girl, a devout Baptist, who tried to baptize her beloved kitten. Well, scratched after repeated failures, she said in hopeless desperation, "Be Episcopal, kitten, and go to hell if you want to." This caused laughter, broke the reserve, and the conversation flowed freely until time to depart. Before this social gathering with her students, two of her chosen lieutenants had experienced difficulties. Edward Bates was a man of decision, action, and accomplishment. But cooperating on a board was not one of his accomplishments. Consequently, there was a good deal of strain between him and the two other trustees from the inception of the trust. One message from the leader to Mr. Mackenzie in this regard included the words, quote, "Dear Mr. Bates is most useful when in the right line. Help him to keep thus," end quote. Everyone tried for 6 months, but at the end of the following July, Mr. Bates resigned from the board. The critical attacks upon Flavia Knapp were less deserved and more insidious, and her struggle against this error was severe. Mrs. Knapp was a fine practitioner with many remarkable healings to her credit. Late in February, she told briefly of some of these healings in a very impressive testimony in the Mother Church, ending with her own healing, contrasting the 13 years of her invalidism with her 13 years of Christian Science practice. After she had resumed her seat, she rose again, and in a tone never forgotten by some of her auditors, she said, quote, "For which of these works do ye stone me?" End quote. Mrs. Knapp had struck at the root of the error assailing her, but a very short time later, after prolonged exposure to bitterly cold weather, while responding to a patient's call, the animal magnetism manifested itself as pneumonia. Both she and the practitioner called upon for help, treated for pneumonia, and she passed away on the 15th of March. About this same time, Mrs. Eddy had requested that her household not bring her any messages about death. So the news of Mrs. Knapp's illness and death was withheld from her until too late. When she learned of it, she sent a telegram to one of Mrs. Knapp's students, Miss J. Isabel Harrington, requesting her to come to Pleasant View, as she wished to ask her about Mrs. Knapp. When Miss Harrington arrived, Mrs. Eddy greeted her tenderly. They sat in Mrs. Eddy's sitting room while Miss Harrington told her about Mrs. Knapp's illness and passing. Mrs. Eddy listened intently and finally said with emphasis, quote, "When will my people learn when to speak and when not to speak? She was my best student. I needed her. Why, I could have helped her just like that," end quote. And she snapped her fingers in the air. When the call was over, Mrs. Eddy went to the head of the stairs with Miss Harrington, kissed her cheek tenderly, and thanked her for coming and for her service in the field. The Knapps' son, Bliss, who was still in school, was spurred by this experience to determine to get a better understanding of science in order to make a repetition of that occurrence impossible. He recorded Mrs. Eddy as stating that Mrs. Knapp and her practitioner were treating the case as pneumonia, which was only the decoy, that had they handled it as mental assassination, they would have healed the case. This occurrence possibly caused more than one student to graduate from handling the beast of revelation to handling the false prophet. Nonetheless, it was a great loss to the leader and caused her to set aside the plans for the Board of Education. Both the July and August journals carried this notice. "We give notice to the field that the Board of Education recently provided for has not yet been formally organized and is not yet ready to receive applications for examination from those desiring to teach. Timely notice will be given in the journal. Until then, applications are not in order. Ample opportunity will be afforded all to place their application on file."